This is Jason Harp. Today is Monday, April the 19th, 2004. I am conducting an interview with Vernon Sawyer for Dr. Karen Flint's Oral History and Memory class in Urban Renewal in Brooklyn Neighborhood Community Oral History Project. If you just want to start as we did the last time, if you want to just give me some information where you were born, when you were born, your background education-wise, and before you came to Charlotte, that'd be great, and then I'll proceed into some questions, if that's okay.
Okay, you just want me to ramble on?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, I was born in Hyde County, in eastern North Carolina county on Pamlico Sound. Little town of Swan Quarter, which was a county, Hyde County seat. I was born in 1922. That makes me 81 years old right now. I finished high school there, and then the war, World War II, came along after I'd had a year and a half of college and interrupted my educational efforts, and I went off to war and came back. Fortunately, had the GI Bill of Rights, which enabled me to finish my education, and I graduated from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, in 1952 with a master's degree in regional planning, city and regional planning. What else you want to know?
Okay, what was your first position with the background you had in city and urban planning?
Well, let me give you a little of my personal philosophy here. When I graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, I was about as idealistic and liberal as I could be. And I was going to go out and change the world. I had had a course or two that touched on the country's public housing program.
Mm-hmm.
This was in some of the sociology courses that I took. And I had actually done a paper on public housing for one of those courses. So I had an interest there, and I was sympathetic with the people who were, for many reasons, were living in slum conditions. So when I graduated, I really sought a job that involved public housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it right here in Norfolk, Virginia, with the Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority. I'm sure you've heard of those authorities. They're in North Carolina. They're in every state,
mm-hmm.
just about.
Exactly.
And they build and supervise, manage public housing. And my title at the time, right out of school, was junior planner on the staff of the Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority. And my boss, Larry Cox, Lawrence M. Cox, was one of the pioneers in the urban renewal program.
Mm-hmm.
He was director of the Housing Authority when they built the first public housing, which started before World War II. And after the war, he was the president of the National Association of Housing Officials. And in that position, he was, he had a hand in writing the urban renewal law.
Huh.
The public housing law was already on the books, and this was an adjunct to that. That put him on the ground floor of the whole program. And it happened that he received, right here in Norfolk, the first urban renewal grant for that program under the new law. And I was in on the ground floor as Larry Cox's junior planner. Now, the planning for that project, as it began, was by a consulting planning agency out of New York. I've long since forgotten the name of the company, but I remember the planner who was doing the planning for the Norfolk program. His name was Charles K. Agle, A-G-L-E, and I worked very closely with him and really got an education as much more of an education from that experience than I got in Chapel Hill, almost.
I understand.
He was a very intelligent fellow. Well, anyway, I've worked with Larry Cox for 4 years, and I've worked up to become his assistant director for the Urban Redevelopment Program. Now, under Larry, there was an assistant director for urban redevelopment, and there was an assistant director for public housing. And he supervised, of course, the whole business. And that's the position I held when the North Carolina program, as a result of the legislature approving enabling legislation, got underway. And as the cities began to hire or set up programs and appoint commissioners, which was done by the city councils, they began to employ staff. And I got a shot at the Charlotte job, and I was employed. I was hired as the first executive director of the Redevelopment Commission of the City of Charlotte. And the Brooklyn project was the first project. Now, let me pause there and see how I'm doing, or am I on track for your...
You are on track. You're on the track that I've laid out. Now, you mentioned the urban renewal law in Virginia. What did you know of Charlotte and the course that they were wanting to take when you heard of them wanting someone for the position here?
Well, I knew something about the law, and I was familiar with the Virginia law, and that, I think, was the pattern for a lot of the state laws around the country. In Virginia, the two agencies were combined. It was the Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority.
Okay.
In North Carolina, the housing authorities were already established, and so the city council and the law, the city council, because of the way the law was written by the legislature, established separate agencies to do the urban renewal program.
Okay.
And what did I know about what they wanted? I assumed that they wanted to do the same thing there that I was doing in Norfolk.
Okay.
That is, clear slums.
Exactly. Now, when you took the position, what was your orientation like? Did the city council set up some type of orientation for you to, you know, go to the Brooklyn neighborhood, or?
Well, the law establishes and spells out a procedure that must be followed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just jump in and say, "Hey, I'm gonna do Brooklyn."
Sure.
The law requires that the planning authority, the planning commission, or whatever it is in a city, after or being directed by the city council to study the city's declining areas,
mm-hmm.
and make recommendations on what should be done.
Mm-hmm.
So the city council initiated the program.
Okay.
The planning commission staff did the housing studies along with the code enforcement people and other input. And they decided that the Brooklyn section was the worst slum in the city,
mm-hmm.
and should be treated first.
Okay. That was sort of my next question, is why you thought it Brooklyn was chosen first. And I'm assuming, as you said, because of the condition.
Well, the conditions were terrible.
Yeah.
You can't imagine. I couldn't imagine until I saw it. I saw conditions there worse than I had dealt with in Norfolk.
Really?
You can't find a slum today that would that would compare to what living conditions were and housing conditions were in Brooklyn.
What were how when you say how bad they were, what were the conditions?
Well, if you'd go, my God, man, I you ought to go to the newspaper and to the archives and dig up some of the pictures that the news people took during that time.
Mm-hmm.
These were what we would consider now to be third world living conditions.
Really?
And you can't find any today because the urban renewal program eliminated most of them.
Mm-hmm.
You can find slums today. You can find what you call slums today. But there just aren't any conditions that I could find right now to compare to the rude, ugly, and ugly is not a reason to clear.
Sure.
Insanitary, unsafe. My God, the several of the thoroughfares that came into the city of Charlotte, came right through Brooklyn. And those streets had been widened over time to the point where they were literally at the doorsteps of these slum houses. And little children playing on a sidewalk at the foot of the steps coming out of the house that was less than 3 feet wide, with cars doing 35 and 40 miles an hour right past them. That was one of the unsafe features there. But there were several ditches there. There were, and these ditches were the collection places for garbage, rats, fleas. My God, I walked through one house one day when I came out. My pants legs were literally black with fleas.
Really?
And that's no joke.
Now, when you went into
a Charlotte News reporter was with me, and she was a woman, and you could really see them on her stockings.
Sure.
That's the kind of conditions that were there. You could see right through the walls of the houses. Heating them in the wintertime was just almost impossible.
Sure.
They had outside privies. They had a lot of inside privies, but they were makeshift and add-ons that were the cheapest minimum that they could get by with the slum lords.
Now, was there? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just telling you to look for yourself through pictures.
Sure.
And the Charlotte News, which is now was bought by the
Observer,
Knight Ritter people, and closed down. It was the afternoon paper. And the one that rode my ass for for 25 years, and then when I finally announced my retirement, they gave me a glowing editorial for the work I had done.
What did they ride you so much about?
Oh, just the general handling of the program and the responding to the complaints of the politicians and the people about interrupting their lives and so on. Certainly we interrupted their lives, but we didn't hurt them. The Urban Renewal Program was really a people program. It was written, the law was written for and designed to help people live better lives, to get them out of these slum conditions. So what we did was force them out of their comfort zone, but we forced them into a better way of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion.
Sure. Now, these folks, these newspaper reporters, were they saying that you were, that's what you were doing, you were basically destroying a culture, or what were they saying exactly about that?
Well, they didn't get into the cultural aspects of it, that the culture was so rude and crude they couldn't defend it. It was indefensible.
I understand.
What they were trying to do was be sure that I didn't move families from the Brooklyn slum to some other slum with my relocation program.
Well, how did that relocation work? Did you meet with the families? Who met with the families and talked about their needs, or how did that work?
It was all, I had staff members to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I had, Charlotte was really not the first city in the state to start a program. But I was the first in the state to employ a social worker.
Okay.
And with a staff that met with these people, went into their homes, not just to tell them they had to move, but to prepare them for the move.
Mm-hmm.
By, God, my social worker, who head social worker, she could tell you tales of...
What was her name?
Her name was Hood. Mrs. Avery Hood.
Okay.
Her husband at one time, Dan Hood, was a member of the school board. He was a school board member. He ran and was elected school board. But Avery Hood, a fine lady, very smart, very dedicated. And she and her staff went in to try to not only answer their questions, but to try to get them to accept some of the nice things about housekeeping, like curtains at the window,
mm-hmm.
sheets on the bed, cleaning the floor. And I'm telling you, they didn't do that.
Really?
There was no incentive to do that. God, I've thought many times, if I were forced to live in one of those shacks and wake up every morning and look out and see the filth, the squalor, and come home from work in the afternoon and see it and go to bed and look at it, God, I don't know what I would have done.
Why do you think they were okay with that?
Because of the laws at the time and now remember, this was before the civil rights movement.
Sure.
When this started. But I worked through the civil rights movement starting in the mid-60s, mid-60s. So they were forced to live there because there were covenants in real estate titles and developments that prevented blacks, Jews, maybe other ethnic groups from moving in.
Hmm.
Now, courts struck those down and declared them unconstitutional during the civil rights movement. But when I started, I had very little resources to work with in terms of relocation housing. But after those laws were struck down, I integrated many of the neighborhoods in Charlotte.
Okay. What were some of the neighborhoods that these folks moved into? Do you remember?
I don't remember the names, but they was generally on the north side, west side, very little in the south and east, if you're familiar with
Charlotte. Oh, yeah. That's where I'm from originally. Were most of these neighborhoods, I'm assuming, white that they moved into?
They were at the time, generally,
mm-hmm.
but not always. Not all of them. There were even then beginning to be some transition in some of the neighborhoods.
Go ahead.
There were a lot of neighborhoods that had never had a black move in, black family move in, and I moved them in. I integrated the Johnston Building in downtown Charlotte. Do you know where that is?
Yeah.
My office was there.
Okay.
And I brought my relocation director, who was black, into my office up there. And that was the first black to work in an office building in downtown Charlotte.
What was their name?
I'm not patting myself on the back.
Sure, I understand, yeah.
What happened.
Certainly. What was their name, your relocation director?
His name was Waddell, Edward Waddell.
Edward Waddell.
And his brother was the assistant superintendent of schools at the time. These were very prominent black citizens in Charlotte.
What was his brother's name? Do you remember?
He went by the name of got his initials.
Okay.
The first one was E. But anyway, they were brothers.
Okay.
In fact, they were twins. Waddell, that's the key. Ed Waddell was my relocation director.
Now, did you handpick Mr. Waddell, or was he?
No, he was the first one was really picked and recommended to me by a black city councilman.
Okay. Now, would that have been Fred Alexander, city councilman?
Fred Alexander, mm-hmm. Exactly. And through my chairman, who at that time was chairman of my commission, was Elmer Rouser. Elmer and I had a meeting with Fred and asked for his input, and he recommended a man that we hired. It turned out that he just couldn't do the job.
Really?
And that's when I brought in Ed Waddell over him, created a whole new position.
Do you think it helped having a black relocation director?
Oh, tremendously.
Tremendously.
Absolutely.
Do you think the folks from the community felt more comfortable because he was black, or?
Well, I don't know. I know he did his job very well, and he got things done that seemed impossible at the time, but Ed always had a way of accomplishing his goals.
Mm-hmm.
He was very good.
Now, do you think that moving folks from the Brooklyn neighborhood simply moved poverty to another neighborhood?
No.
It didn't?
No, because we paid for their relocation expenses.
Okay.
We gave them a grant, with a relocation grant. They could use it to down payment on another house rather than pay rent if they chose. And a lot of them ended up homeowners.
Okay.
As a result of that, this was a very good program.
Do you think, did most of the folks utilize, did you do a follow-up with the folks? Did your committee do a follow-up to see how the folks were doing with their new property, or a way to gauge the results of the program?
Well, that was part of the relocation process. There was a follow-up. It wasn't as intensive as the move
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, but there was feedback, and yes, we did some of that.
Gotcha. Did you get any negative sentiment from, other than maybe the newspapers, about the urban renewal movement in Brooklyn neighborhood? I mean, from folks in the neighborhood. Did anybody in the neighborhood, did they voice any negative sentiment to you all?
Oh, sure.
Any of their leaders?
We fought the fight. We had dissenters at the city council meetings every week.
Really?
We had lawsuits from the Legal Aid Society. Have you ever heard of the Legal Aid Society? This was a program that was created as part of President Lyndon Johnson's Great Society.
Great Society,
I'm sure you've heard of that.
Exactly.
Well, these legal aid lawyers, or he created, the law really created them to help these people with their everyday problems,
mm-hmm.
To defend them when they were in court for non-payment of rent, when the merchants, and that was mainly the used furniture dealers who would sell these people property on the on credit, and the first payment they missed, even if they'd been paying for a year, they'd repossess and resell it, and that sort of thing, divorces and all of that. Instead of doing that for these people, they wanted to change the world. They wanted to, and they did. They came in and sued me on constitutional grounds, tied me up and my staff in court for so many times that I think the idea was to pin us down so that we couldn't do our job, and then they'd sue us for not doing our job. But anyway, I think and I hope, Jason, that you'll write this history in the context of the time that
certainly.
It happened.
Mm-hmm.
And not judge it by today's
standards, yeah.
Political correctness
sure.
standards. You're a historian, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what a historian is supposed to do. Right?
Certainly, certainly.
And I don't want this distorted.
Oh, certainly.
Some of the feedback that you got that said it was a negative program. It was a very positive program.
Yeah, and that's really, in essence, what the project is really about, is examining, of course, my angle on the project is interviewing city council members.
Right.
And, you know, the folks in my class are interviewing folks from the Brooklyn neighborhood, and so I'm not really, at this point, not getting from them, I'm not getting the same interviews that they are.
Yeah.
And what they're getting from folks up to this point, or what I've gotten so far, is mainly reminiscences of what life was like in Brooklyn, and from the folks who live there.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it from another angle, and just trying to look at every single thing, of course, from the standpoint of the time period, you know,
yeah.
what was going on, what type of legislation, you know, eminent domain, because, of course, the issue of eminent domain is in the news now.
Yeah,
and
right.
looking
we
at...
We used it extensively, not against the people in Brooklyn, but against the owners of the property that were the slums. However, in addition to that, there was... little cells of home, black home ownership in there.
Oh, is that right?
And we had to use our power in some of that, and against churches. And
mm-hmm.
I guess the worst publicity we got was condemning a church.
Mm-hmm.
But, Jason, you know that hindsight is 20/20.
Sure.
And there's a tendency always, and it's popular, to look back and romanticize the old neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it going back to Swan Quarter.
Sure.
But I'm telling you, the old neighborhood was one of the worst sort of slums, with rats, outdoor privies, and just all kinds of squalor.
So there were some folks in the neighborhoods who owned their houses?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, the other homeowners, Mr. John Thrower mentioned that the majority, if not all of the homeowners, were, you know, white homeowners.
All of the homeowners were not white.
Oh, really? Okay.
The majority of the ownership of the slum properties were white.
Okay.
But, like I said, there was several little neighborhoods that were... where the houses were owned by the residents,
mm-hmm.
and you could drive through and see, just pick these out because they had the grass was mowed.
Oh, okay.
There were flowers tended to,
mm-hmm.
and the house was probably painted, and there was just a difference.
So these.
When we look at the overall.
Sure.
Low percentage
mm-hmm.
Of the houses there.
Mm-hmm. Now these were folks in Brooklyn.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now did they run businesses in Brooklyn? Do you know?
Oh yes.
Did
yes.
they?
Yes. They were full of little stores, but many of those were white owners.
Mm-hmm.
And they would extend the credit, and they did what they had to do to make it in those conditions.
Now were these homeowners that were black, were they given any opportunity to buy their homes? When
oh sure, they had the equity in their home,
mm-hmm.
and many times the home was what they called heir property.
Okay,
they had inherited it.
Gotcha. Okay,
it passed down from heir to heir, and we paid them, of course, appraised value,
mm-hmm.
and they took that money and went out and bought a better home in a better neighborhood.
Okay. Now, eminent domain.
Yeah.
Would you consider eminent domain an ethical procedure?
I do.
Okay.
I did. That's the only way we could have done the projects and made the progress that we did.
Were there any other options to doing?
Well, we negotiated the vast majority of the properties.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
And we only used eminent domain as a last resort.
Okay.
And when we used eminent domain, the law required us to pay the legal expenses of the homeowner.
Gotcha.
The owner of the property
mm-hmm.
owner.
Mm-hmm.
The homeowner, but the property owner, who was a slum lord, generally.
Mm-hmm.
We called him in those days. I guess that's still an acceptable term today.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Now, who were, and you mentioned at the city council meetings, the folks from the Legal Aid Society, were there leaders from the Brooklyn community that came and spoke out at the city council meetings?
Oh, yes.
Who were some of those folks? Do you remember?
God, I can't remember the names, but...
Any that stuck out in your mind?
They were the better versed people who lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were living there because they couldn't live anywhere else at the time, as I explained to you.
Because of the deed covenants?
Yes.
Yeah.
And because of the segregation.
True.
And so on. And because of economics. They,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't afford anything better. These people were the women were the maids, and the men held the menial jobs in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have money to live better.
Sure, sure.
What was the question again?
About
eminent domain.
Yeah.
Well.
Other options.
Yeah. Negotiating, we had, the law required us to get at least 2 appraisals, independent appraisals.
Okay.
And on the basis of those appraisals, which we required appraisers to be well qualified and have the designations and the educational background from their profession to do a good job and to be expert witnesses in court.
Mm-hmm.
Because when a property could not be bought by negotiation, it ended up in the eminent domain
mm-hmm.
procedure in court. So we had to have that. Then we set the price. My commissioners set the price.
Mm-hmm.
I did all the legwork, and I made recommendations to them. The commission had to approve every eminent domain procedure.
Okay.
I could not make that decision. But I had 5 commissioners who were my bosses,
mm-hmm.
appointed by the city council,
mm-hmm.
who ran the program for the city council. So when I, and we hired negotiators from the real estate industry in Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
and we had 2 very good ones who bought most of the property. And when they failed to buy the property within a range of the appraisals that we had, there was no recourse except to go to eminent domain.
Mm-hmm. Well, who were there?
Because we were buying the whole area. We weren't buying individual properties and buy this one and leave that one.
Mm-hmm.
That would not have worked.
Mm-hmm. Who were the negotiators? Do you remember their names?
Lee Kinney was one.
Okay.
And, but he didn't do as much as the other one. Let me see. What was his name?
And these are realtors?
Yes. I'll try to think of it
okay.
before we hang up.
But
he was a real gentleman, well-known, highly regarded. We went first class in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Not by spending money going first class, but by choosing very well qualified people to do our work.
Okay. What you mentioned, Fred Alexander being on the city guide.
Yeah.
He was originally from Brooklyn, wasn't he?
He not during my time there.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
He may have been at one time, but
okay.
he was a property manager of a big housing project on the north side.
Okay.
Beyond the Johnson C. Smith University.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering if there were any individuals, maybe Reginald Hawkins or anyone like that, who came to the council meetings to voice disapproval of what...
Oh, Reginald Hawkins was a real activist.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed. He was there all the time. Fred Alexander's brother, Kelly,
mm-hmm.
who was head of the NAACP there,
mm-hmm.
he was there much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The ministers of the churches
mm-hmm.
in the area were there on behalf of their members of their congregation and so on. The ACLU was there.
Yeah.
The Legal Aid Society was there. Jason, it wasn't easy.
Yeah, I can just imagine. What, when they came to the meetings, what was their contention? I mean, what were they voicing disapproval, or were they asking for anything in particular, or?
They were asking for more, and they were asking for the program to be stopped.
Okay. Did they have any alternatives? I mean, did they say, can we try this, or did they just say, we don't want to see this happen?
They just didn't want it to happen.
Okay.
There was no reasonable alternative that they could offer.
I understand.
They say, don't move these people. Because at that time, they regarded the change of land use in Brooklyn as a political, economic thing.
Okay.
Well, it was in the long run for the city of Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
because the city, the downtown Charlotte, was surrounded by, I don't know whether you're familiar with the ward system in
yeah.
Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
They were surrounded by First Ward, Second Ward, and Second Ward was Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Third Ward over there where the stadium is,
mm-hmm.
and Fourth Ward, which was a pretty good neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We never went in there and bought property and cleared it. We went in there late after the program had changed from the bulldozer approach to the fix-em-up approach.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a program in Fourth Ward that there was a fix-up, and we gave grants and that sort of thing. And you can see the difference.
Sure.
It just never was a slum. But it was on the way because it had deteriorated to the point where many of the houses were being chopped up for apartments. And that sort of thing. And that's a sure sign that it's on the decline.
So Fourth Ward was more of a redevelopment than a renewal.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. But anyway, what I'm saying is the land use in Brooklyn had to change. It
mm-hmm.
just was no longer residential property.
Mm-hmm.
When part of our plan for Brooklyn was to provide thoroughfares into the city of Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Every street, I think, that I encountered was not over 40 feet wide.
Really?
And that included the not only from curb to curb where the two lanes where the cars ran, but the meager sidewalk, which I don't believe there was one that was over 3 feet wide, and they were all broken and deteriorated, and just about every one of them, every street, had Duke Power's utility poles and all of the poles sitting right in the sidewalk. So you had to, they weren't beside the sidewalk, they were in the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You had to duck around them when you were walking. So, city downtowns, the downtown areas of cities at that time were dying.
Mm-hmm.
And they were dying for several reasons, but one of the main reasons was shopping centers were being developed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pulling the businesses out of downtown.
True.
And another reason why they were dying was because they were generally inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were accessible, it was through a slum area,
mm-hmm.
which workers at that time regarded Brooklyn as a dangerous area.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the intersection of McDowell Street with, I think, Second Street,
mm-hmm.
was, when I went there, was called Murder Corner.
Is that right?
God, God, a Saturday night didn't pass before without someone being shot, either wounded or killed, or a big fight break out. I'm telling you, it was a terrible area.
Yeah. So what?
Anyway, that when we started buying the property, and this is a significant thing, when we started buying that slum property, the Internal Revenue Service required the owners to reinvest that money in, quote, like-kind property.
Okay.
So if it was residential property, they had to reinvest it in other residential property or either pay the tax on it. So they elected to postpone the tax by investing it in other residential property. This became something of an economic boon for Charlotte at that time. And these people were getting money that they had to reinvest. Developments were taking place. Realtors were thriving. Lawyers were thriving. My gosh, we gave every lawyer in the city title work to not only in Brooklyn, but as the program expanded to First Ward, Greenville, Dilworth. You probably are aware of where the program operates. And so we had lawyers getting getting prosperous, realtors getting prosperous, home slum landlords getting prosperous because money was, we spent for that time, during the course of the program, we spent over $80 million in federal funds, and that was just two-thirds of the course of the cost. The city had to put in one-third. So this was a significant thing for Charlotte economically as well, but it wasn't, that's what it wasn't designed to do. It was designed to get people out of slums. And you may recall, or you may or may not know, that when the Housing and Home Finance Agency, HHFA, was the original federal agency that funded the program, through which the money flowed. President Kennedy elevated that to a department, the Department of Housing and Urban Development,
HUD.
Is today, HUD. The first secretary of HUD was a black man.
Really?
Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
He was a prominent housing official from New York City. And President Kennedy chose him to head that agency. So it wasn't a program imposed on the poor blacks by white people. I just wanted you to understand.
Sure, certainly, certainly. Well, what was being done in Charlotte at that time? Well, I guess you might probably spoke to this when you discussed what was done with them, but to take care of the poor. Basically, the programs that you mentioned?
Well, there, of course, there's always been the welfare agencies. And we had to work very closely with the welfare agencies who were paying the, subsidizing the rents and so on of the low-income citizens. Because their rent would have to go up when they move from this slum to a better house. So we had to work very closely with the agency. At that time, the head of the agency was Wallace Carolt. Does the name Carolt strike you?
Yeah, exactly, Charles.
His son was Charles.
Okay.
Wallace's son was Charles.
Okay.
But anyway, Wallace and I worked very, not closely, but we had... we worked in tandem, put it that way, and sometimes we did work very closely. He recommended Mrs. Avery Hood to me as my first social worker because she had worked for him for a number of years and had had left. And but he was very fond of her. He was very. Recommended her very highly.
Now, Mr. Carolt worked with welfare?
He was the head.
Head, okay.
He was the head of the welfare department in Mecklenburg County.
Okay. Do you think that the urban renewal movement taking place close to the time that integration was happening helped or hurt things?
Well, I think it helped.
Did it?
I think it helped.
In what way?
Well, it gave the blacks their freedom to live and where they chose,
mm-hmm.
rather than being relegated to a ghetto.
Exactly.
Number one, it opened up, and the chamber of the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. I want to commend them. The Charlotte Chamber of Commerce at that time was a strong political and economic force in Charlotte, and I think it still is. Several of the mayors of Charlotte came right out of the Chamber of Commerce as presidents.
Mm-hmm.
Presidents of the Chamber of Commerce: Stan Brookshire,
mm-hmm.
John Belk. Well, those two come to mind.
Sure.
But anyway, the Chamber of Commerce, in cooperation with the city, instigated a program for integrating restaurants,
mm-hmm. I heard that,
workplaces, and that sort of thing. And that couldn't have happened if the civil rights movement hadn't taken place.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any burn baby burn things in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Probably because of that.
Okay. Now, I don't suppose there was anybody from the city council other than maybe Don Bryant who said anything against the urban renewal plan.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I went to Charlotte January 1st, 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Within 6 months, that summer, there was a council election.